April 3, 2021. It's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Happy Saturday for Saturday, April. And we started off with John Coltrane live at Carnegie Hall with Thelonious Monk doing Nutty. And then Big Italian Style Mix Fry, Joe Berardi. And people, Brother Maddie's at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point because it's still quick Quarantino mode. But I'm not totally man alone because those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got Brother Joe Berardi. Welcome aboard, Joe.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for coming to the rescue and making everything happen. I've been a big fan of your work a long time, and then a real joy getting to fucking actually play with you, collab with you. So
I'm
really curious about your journey through music. So let's start as far back as you could go. What's your earliest musical recollection, Joe?
Well, my earliest recollection of listening to music was, I don't even know how old I was, probably 3, 4. My aunt bought me a box set of cowboy songs, records, you know. So I think that got me started on just my sort of lifelong love of records and vinyl and just, you know, listening to music as a listener. It was a cool, you know, it was like a classic, Roy Rogers and all those sort of cowboys of the 50s, I guess. And,
Gene Autry?
Yeah, must have been, you know, it was like a box of like little 45s. I remember it really well. I don't have it, but, I'm not that much of a hoarder, but I do collect stuff, you know. But anyway, that's sort of my first memory of, interacting with music, especially like directly, you know. Then when I was in kindergarten at 5 years old, this is when we moved to Florida where I grew up. I was born in New York, moved to Florida, and I grew up there, went to school there and all that. So when I was in kindergarten, they had an accordion class, and for some reason I took it, and I couldn't really play the accordion. But it's kind of a funny story because we had a big kind of a Christmas concert at the end of the season or whatever. And, they told all us little kids, you know, the kindergartners to kind of fake, pretend like you're playing because none of us could really play. And then there were older kids in the class that actually were playing the song. So, at the end of the concert, the next day in class, they said, we're going to give a prize to the person who did the best job. And I won the prize for faking it the best. And so it was a box of those snowball cookies. I don't know if you remember those, but those big mounds of foam with coconut on top of them. And I love those. And I was so excited about the whole thing. But the thing is, it sort of reinforced my this is what making music is about. You don't have to be good. You just have to look like you're good. So,
right, you got early training with lip sync, sort of a lip sync.
Kind of, yeah. Like pretend like you're playing. They didn't say just sit there. They said, you know, pretend like you're playing. And so I did a good job of that. So that was my first experience. And I kind of dropped the accordion as quick as I picked it up. You know, I don't even remember how long I played, but. Then I started, probably like most kids, and grew up in the 60s, I started, I was about 12, I wanted to play guitar. I was really into music as a listener, and so I wanted to play guitar, so guitar was my first instrument. Played that for a couple of years, had a couple of really crappy, unplayable guitars, and my next-door neighbor had a drum set. In the process, I had also been dabbling with, I had some drumsticks. You know, I was doing the other typical thing of just banging on plastic garbage can, upside down garbage cans and things like that, you know, just household things just to kind of, because I loved the visual aspect of drums, you know, like it's very mysterious to me of like, what are all those elements and what does that do? And, oh, they're using their foot, you know, and it's not like now where you can go on YouTube and see any drummer from the history of drums, you know, right there in 2 seconds, you know. You had to like look at magazines and pictures and whatever you might have seen on TV. So it's a different world in that way. But anyway, yeah. So I just I went over to my next door neighbor's and he had that drum set and I sat down and could kind of play a groove. And so I said, "Do you want to trade? I'll give you my electric guitar for the drums." And he did. And that was pretty much the beginning of it all for me. You know, so I never looked back. I mean, I still play guitar. for my own amusement, but you know, it's like drums were just a natural fit for me. So there you go. That's how it started.
What was the first record you bought with your own money, Joe? What town in Florida? You know, that's a big state.
Yeah, Daytona Beach.
Oh, okay. On the ocean side. Yeah. I played near there. What's that space? Melbourne. There's that by Cape Canaveral or something.
Yeah, and Cape Canaveral and all that. Yeah, huh?
In fact, we conked at Jaco Pastorius's brother's pad.
Oh, really? Wow.
I wouldn't shit you, Joe.
That's interesting.
It was quite an adventure because this guy, he's an accountant at daytime, but nighttime he was a poet, and he had this big creed he read us. It was insane. You can tell there was something in the family. Maybe it's in the genes. I don't know. But he was a very sweet guy. I remember us leaving. He was on the deck with the pillowcase over his head. You know, conked out in a big basket of jalapenos. He had ate most of them, but some are still left there.
Sounds like that would be something in the Jaco, in the Pastorius family. Yeah.
So, yeah, the first, you know, Robert found the bass, right, and gave it back to the family. It's an incredible thing. So the first record you bought with your own money, and then the first gig you saw where people are playing live, like you saw a real drummer.
Yeah. The first record, it's either one of two. I can't remember. It was either the Rolling Stones' big hits, High Tide and Green Grass. I don't know if you know that one.
Yeah, sure.
But it's a great collection of all their earliest hits. So it's the greatest hits, you know, and it came out pretty early in their career to have a greatest hits, but they had that many, you know. So that was one of the first. The other first might have been Bob Dylan, Highway 61 Revisited. But I had those two. Those were my first two recollections of records that I bought. And I bought a little, you know, turntable from this guy that lived down the street that sold electronics. And, you know, it wasn't a turntable. It was a little record player.
Sure.
You know, it was pretty bad. And
yeah, Dee Boone had one of them. And I had an 8-track. The new thing.
It's really, yeah.
Because the Columbia, the club, you send in a dime, they send you 10 8-tracks.
Yeah.
They send you one a month. If you don't send it back, you have to buy it.
Yeah, that's how they hook you. Yeah.
Right. Gateway, the first one's free. Yeah. So what was the first gig?
Well, my first real concert is, it's actually something I'm very proud of. I'm the youngest of three, and I haven't, my brother's like 11 years older, so he was, you know, significantly older.
Sure.
Him and my sister took me to see Bob Dylan in 1966. So it was the tour with what would be the band, you know, Robbie Robertson and that. So it was
Levon Helm.
What's that?
Levon Helm.
Well, Levon was in that band, but he had left, and so it's that other guy.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. That's right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Okay, let's talk about the bass band, the other Canadians, right?
I think
Levon was the only U.S. guy, but Rick Danko, and then I think Garth on the organ.
And then
the guy who, I think he hung himself in Florida, Richard Manuel.
One of those guys definitely hung himself, and I don't remember that it was Florida, but it could have been because lots of strange things happen in Florida, as we all know.
I remember reading about it for some reason and remembering that he liked drinking this weird kind of liqueur called the Mariner, Grand Mariner. It's some orange kind of shit.
Oh, Grand Marnier.
Yeah, that's it.
It's like really sweet orange. Yeah, just like. Oh, God, I can't imagine drinking too much of that.
The horror.
Yeah. Horror. Yeah.
So, okay.
So that was my first exposure. And it was so exciting for me. You know, I was 12. And so I was, you know, just everything was new. And the whole vibe of it, it was in a big, it was in the Jacksonville Coliseum, which is a big, you know, one of those multi-event kind of, giant halls, like the Forum or something. And it wasn't full, you know, it wasn't like packed, sold out, but it, you know, it was crowded. There were a lot of people there. There were all these super hip, kind of, you know, beatnik-y looking dudes hanging around the lobby. And you know, as a little kid, I was just so, like, so enthralled by the whole thing. And, yeah. and it was intimidating, too, you know, because it was, like, the real world and a cool world and all that stuff, you know. But I remember looking at the instruments, you know, and that was fascinating. My vivid memory is that they must have been Fender Twins. And you know how Fender Twins have those arms on the sides or so you can angle sure. them up?
Yeah.
So they all had that, and I had never seen that, and I thought, well, that's real interesting looking, and most people don't do that these days with those
amps. No, but it makes sense, because otherwise you're blowing into the back of your fucking cas.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So that drum set you got from the neighbor, was it a fancy one?
No, it was a cheap, you know, made in Japan. Red
well,
Sparkle.
Fucking Thomas made in Japan, and they're pretty good.
No, it's not to disparage anything made in Japan, but back then, you know, the Japanese knockoffs were just not the high quality that they could paint. Yeah. So it was a cheap drum set. It was part. I don't think I even had a floor tom. You know, I got that later.
Oh, that's, like Nick Knox and the Cramps, right?
Yeah, but not by design, just because that's all that was there. It was like a bass drum, a snare drum, a hi-hat, and a rack tom, I believe, and then maybe a couple of crappy cymbals. But, you know, so, it was a low-end drum set, but I loved it and, you know, used it for a long time. And, through my whole learning process.
Let's talk about your... Well, no. Let's first play the Rice song, Fibonacci. Thank you.
Everybody else is problems. soak into my brain like a sponge. The squalor, the filth, the dirt, and the crunch. When my eyes close, the projected stars rolling from frame to frame, I go nightmare. And it's somebody else's nightmare, living other people's dreams, watching everybody else. But I'm the only one who
thank you. Thank you. Make the world.
Walk for Pedro show, we played a Fibonacci's with Rash song. After that, brand new Guided by Voices, Margaret Middle School. Dustin Wong, Annihilated Toxins. He's got a brand new record, Internal Hot Springs. Great. It came out last week, Dustin Wong. Tobacco, Mr. Tommy's got a new album out of Pittsburgh, This Man. I think it's called Fucked Up Friends Number 3. I don't even remember number 2, so I don't know. Obama's printing after that somewhere, Someone Else's Nightmare. D.C. area. Hands Rotten from Switzerland. Loop Mic Test. Andy Kerr out of the Netherlands with Foolish Love Song. He was the cat that was called He Who Can't Be Named. That was his name. He's doing sound for the No Means No guys. But this is his own solo record, Andy Kerr. And then finally, Fibonacci's with Narcissist, which luckily we got to phase that period out for a little bit with some Bowden. Thank you. Okay, Joe. So what about at school? Did you get involved with it after the accordion days, like choir or marching band or shit like that?
No, actually, I didn't. The school I went to didn't have a marching band.
Okay.
And
what about in the afternoon after school with the garage band, basement band, bedroom band, stuff like that?
That was totally my roots. I mean, that was my after school. I would either go home and just play drums by myself, practice to records, or at a certain point, there's a kid down the street who I'm still in touch with, a great guy. He was a guitar player. He's a year or two younger than me, but he played guitar. So we formed first it was a duo, just guitar and drums, and he sang, and then we added a friend on bass, you know, maybe a little while later, just roped in somebody that was a good friend. He wasn't a great musician, and he never really, you know, Mike, who was a guitar player, he taught him what to do on bass, and he never really kind of went further. But we did have our own little rock combo, and so yeah, that was the thing. We actually, my house was the ground zero for the rehearsals. We, you know, my mom was real tolerant of that, so we rehearsed in the garage and
you know, a
so,
lot of times it's the drummer's pad that the practice is done.
Yeah, I guess it's true now that you mention it.
Because you don't have to fucking set them up and tear down. That's why I got a drum set for my practice pad. I got tired of waiting. What about a name? Did you have a name? Did you do gigs?
Yeah, we did. We were called Red Weather, and which we named after at the time, you know, it's probably like 14, 15, was really into Blue Cheer. Remember Blue Cheer?
Yeah, big time, Dickie Pierce.
Yeah, so the bass player, the guitar player was this guy, Lee Stevens, and he had his own, he put out a solo record called Red Weather. So we stole that name, we stole his album title for our band name. We liked it. We thought it sounded cool, kind of psychedelic, and, you know.
You know who was the keyboard player? Well, the second keyboard player was Ethan James from Radio Tokyo.
Yes, I know that, yeah.
But on the record covers, you won't see Ethan James. You'll see Ralph Kellogg.
Oh, that was his. Is that his real name, or is that his made-up name?
Well, I think you're born and given a name, and then maybe you choose another.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like Spot and all those guys, Pat Smear. I mean.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was thinking of this recently. Talking about that, probably the best punk rock name out there is actually his real name is DJ Bonebreak.
Oh yeah, Don Bonebreak. Yeah,
it's such an amazing punk rock name, but it's actually not made up.
Yeah, I know a lot of people thought me and D Boone's names were punk names.
Well, yeah, I mean, what?
Daniel Boone and Light Bulb.
Yeah, what a great name for an electric, someone that plays an electric instrument, you know.
So, what was the first Red Weather gig like?
Well, I do remember the very first one. It was one of our classmates. This girl had a birthday party and hired us to play. And I think we got paid. You know, I think we probably got paid $20 and for the whole band. And we had a 4-piece band, and so we each made $5. And that was a big deal. I don't remember how we sounded, but I remember how exciting it was
Can I ask you about the material? Were they copy songs? Or were they?
We did covers. We did Blue Cheer covers. We did Cream covers.
Well, they did cover, right? Parchment Farm and Summertime Blues.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. And, I mean,
although I got to say, they changed them.
They really did. They really made them their own.
Which was Paul's out to do because The Who had covered Eddie Cochran's Summertime Blues.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But yeah, there's nothing like the Blue Cheer version.
Yeah. In fact, that record, you can mix that record yourself because it's so hard stereo.
Yeah, it's really the crazy sounding record.
Ethan told me they were so loud that they had to practice on a houseboat up the city because it was just a lot of volume. Yeah.
A lot of volume. Well, you know, that was one of the records that their second album called Outside Inside. Because it was recorded outside and inside. But it had that great fold out of them live and just kind of blurry photo where the drummer's arms are just blur. As a teenage kid, you know, I would just stare at that and listen to the record and the wall of Marshall amps behind them. And it was just, you know, that was just
there was other cats too, like that, Mitch Mitchell, Keith Moon. Were they influences?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My influence is like, I learned to play by playing along to, the three Hendrix records, a lot. And,
you know what Jimmy said about Mitch? He said, he's my Elvin Jones.
Yeah. And, you know, absolutely. When you hear it, you know, it's so clear to hear. I didn't know anything about Elvin Jones back then, of course.
Yeah, of course. But I didn't either. I fucking didn't. Raymond Pettibone turned me on to John Coltrane. But, you know, it's funny, like a song like Let Me Stand Next to Your Fire, right? I'm going to show you everything I know in this one song.
Yeah, I mean.
We're at the end of the first hour, Joe. April 3, 2021, Dish Wap Pedro Show special guest, Joe Berardi. Hang tight for hour two. April 3, 2021, it's the second hour of the Wap Pedro Show.
To travel far, I Consolados tras otra vida. que quieras. Humedecen y aplastan tus piernas.
¡No! ¡Me mires!
Animal con escamas y plumas y pelo. No envidies la cola que le asoma al asno amarrado.
Es el cumplido señal, consolado tras otra mirada.
Watch for Pedro show. We start off the second hour. Harry Cloud with Sam I Am. That's Joe helping out Harry. We'll get to that. Ben Salter after that, gone to Launceston. Whatever the fuck. I fuck up people's languages. I fuck up their town names. I'm so sorry. D is for dermatologist from Lucas Abella. Don the Tiger. Bebopalua. But yeah, his version. Aruba Abua. Naonda A1. Ayamud from Hi-Fi Club with Eugene Chadbourn. And finally, Mentote 6. All lit up. Nothing to do. So, now you end up leaving Florida. You end up in Southern California.
Yeah. Yeah. I came out here actually this year, just in January. It's my 40th anniversary of moving out here. So this is definitely my home, you know? I went to Boston where my mom is from. I have a lot of relatives up there. After high school, a couple of years later, I went to Boston, kicked around there for a little bit, came back to Florida, and I was always working, you know, like just working, playing music. I was, you know, do cover bands or whatever it took to make a living. But always had, you know, an interest in sort of things beyond, you know, like I was interested in percussion and not just straight up drum set. And I had also started playing piano when I was in college age. So I had this sort of background of other kinds of music, and the stuff that I was making a living playing was not as interesting as the stuff I really wanted to make. And I knew I couldn't stay in Florida because it just was not, I was not going to find what I might have wanted. So I had some friends that lived out here and they coaxed me into coming out, and I did. And it was great. The first year I moved out here, I joined I did the typical thing. I scoured the recycler. You remember that?
Right. The pink. It was at the 7-Eleven for 75 cents. The ads were for free.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was how you found, you know,
Joe, that's how I found all my cars and my amps, my basses, everything.
Everything, right? Yeah. I mean, I guess it was like Craigslist.
No, Craigslist was like that.
Well, right. Yeah. There you go.
I mean, I remember the ads for musicians. No flakes, must have own transportation.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It was actually just like there were probably like four or five different styles of ads that you would wade through. But anyway, that's what I did. I, you know, moved out here, and my friend said, you got to get the recycler every week, and you go through and you look for people to play with. And I did that for the first 6 months, and yeah, you know, met a bunch of people and eventually hooked up with the Fibonacci's, and that sort of started my, you know, it was kind of the band I had always been looking for, really.
That's where I first saw you play with.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, it's funny because we did a lot of shows, you know, relatively with the Minutemen. We played on a lot of bills together.
Sure.
And I saw the Minutemen countless times because, you know, you guys were one of my favorite bands. and this was, so this is starting in 81, you know, so you guys were pretty new as well. What year did that start?
January 80, so we're only like a year or year and a half probably.
Yeah, yeah. And you were sort of, you know, you were like rising above the crowd, you know, because, you know, it was so unique and just kicking ass, but also really interesting and great songwriting and the whole thing. So, you know, I followed the Minutemen a lot. And like I said, we played on a lot of bills and, you know, we never knew each other. You know, we just say hi in passing and
yeah.
You guys were always really nice to us and but we never sort of hung out. We never were friends, but
well, you know, SoCal's kind of spread out, and Pedro, we're way in the harbor, you know, so after the gig, we had to like get home.
Yeah, absolutely.
We all worked, other things during the daytime. And, did you have to try out for Fibonacci's?
Well, I did actually. And it's funny because, I was talking to a couple of the members just recently about this. We kind of were reminiscing. We're in the process of getting our stuff together to put up online like, you know, for digital availability. So, which is not, so far nothing's up, but we're getting that together. So we kind of were reminiscing, and yeah, I did audition. I mean, it was pretty informal. I just went over there and played for an afternoon. They had given me the songs on the cassette and said, yeah, we'll play some of these songs. And I did. And as soon as I had seen them, I went to Al's bar to see them first. And the minute I saw them, I just was totally in love with the band. It's like, yeah, I wasn't even like, oh, I want to be in this band. I'm like, I'm going to be in this band because I'm the perfect drummer for them. And, just kind of on a musical level, you know, it was just kind of made for each other.
And they were already going.
Yeah, they had been.
What, they lost the drummer?
Oh, but they were together for maybe 3-4 months, and they didn't have a drummer at all. So this was their first sort of venture into, like, the idea of having drums. Because it's one of those bands that started very casually. It sort of wasn't by design. It was just, they kind of fell into it.
Well, there was a lot of that in those days because the movement embraced, you know, weirdness.
Exactly. And so they, you know, John, the keyboard player, had been playing, and he had played in bands when he was in high school, and, you know, similar to me. But Ron, the guitar player, and Maggie, the singer, they hadn't done really music. I mean, Ron had been playing music, but they had never been in a band or anything like that. So this was their first their first jumping into the pool. Ron never kind of took to it, to be honest. I think he always was, like, uncomfortable being on stage and all that. But he had a great musical mind, and he had really cool ideas. So
Harry Nilsson, I read, was really shy about playing gigs.
Really?
Yeah, and he was talented as hell. I don't think ever did a gig. I want to play this other proj, because we got to talk about these. Non Credo, something called Curious Coupling.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pedro Show, Non Credo with Curious Couplings, then Inspired Minorities Chant from Maria Nikiforova from the Emma Golden Bust Out Brigade. We know what that collab is about.
Yes.
And Death Samantha from Cleveland after that with Blood Crick. And then finally, 8-Bit Horror, Non Credo. What's Non Credo?
Non Credo is me and Kira Volman, my musical partner, we've been making music together for a long, long time.
Oh,
and so it's just the two of us, and we, you know, we record and play and record at home. And you know, we started in the, in the late 80s, we started doing that. And,
do you do gigs?
Yeah, we do. We haven't done any gigs lately. And again, obviously not last year, but we had started, you know, sporadically because we don't, it's just two of us and we've done gigs as a duo, but we need other people. But yeah, we do gigs, you know, like mostly, kind of like gallery settings. Kira has a sort of an art space in Altadena that, it's called ARK, A-R-K.
Okay.
And she's been doing, shows there, like sort of, kind of like new music shows, sporadically too, not anything real consistent, but it's some really cool stuff. She has this building that she's sort of built, a little stage and a little gallery area, holds about 50 people, and, really cool. And the sound is actually really good in that room. So she's done all kinds of stuff with people like Vinnie Golias played there.
Yeah, great cat. But that's a hell ride from Pedro to Dina.
What's that?
It's a hell ride from Pedro Altadena.
Oh yeah, but
one day I'll go there. What's Mentot 6?
Mentot 6 is a combination. That's Stuart Liebig. You know him.
Oh yeah, bassman. Yeah, friend of Nels Klein, G.E. Stinson.
Exactly.
Vinnie Golia.
Yeah, exactly. He's played with all those guys a lot. He had this band. We first were called the Mentones, and it was me and Stuart. Bill Barrett and Tony Atherton, who, you know, Tony for sure.
Sax man from, Bazooka with Vince Maroney.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Harry Cloud, you were telling me off air, he's a singer songwriter, people. And you recorded with Paul Rossler, and how'd that connect happen?
Yeah, well, I don't remember how I got hooked up with them. I mean, I've known Paul for a long time, obviously, but I don't remember. But I was playing with the Deadbeats, and I guess if that band plays again, I'll still be playing with them. But so far,
right? Because they were brothers, right? And the drummer, yeah, we lost him.
Yeah, and he's a great drummer, Sean Guerin.
Yeah, I remember seeing them at the Whiskey. He'd play on the side. Not typical position for the drummer.
Right.
And his brother Sagan was wearing big rubber dick glasses. And
yeah, that Scott still does that. He still wears costumes. And
what was the song? The song was like, send him back to kill the hippies. Send him back to San Francisco.
Yeah, that was their big hit. As
look, Giza X, right. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, April 3, 2021. Just Watt Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. April 3, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Even the Pope, and even the Pope, and even the Pope. die, 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 pig, die.
Watch for Pedro show. Start off the third hour, Double Knot Spy Car, Tale of the Comet. John Wayne after that. Is that justice? Trooper from Poland with I Hate. Psychic Hotline, Probable Cause. Carnival Jones, It's Dark Out There. And finally, Double Knot Spy Car with Criminal Luminosity. Now, what's the story with Double Knot Spy Car?
Well, those two songs that you played from Spy, well, let me backtrack it. Spy Car is it's a four-piece, and we recently added Danny Magoo on keyboards, but kind of a guitar-based instrumental band. Really varied influences, kind of soundtrack, surf, spy music, all kinds of stuff. But, you know, just sort of like mashed up together. Really cool band, really fun band for me to play in because it's really sort of open. I can do whatever I feel like song needs, and everybody digs it. Nobody, you know, it's sort of very.
Let me get this right. You get to help compose.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean that's how we write with that band. We kind of, somebody will come in with an idea, or we just jam a lot. We just play a lot. And with that, we have the luxury of Mark Doten, the bass player, has a studio where you came to play. And so we can record everything we do, you know. So we usually just run Pro Tools and we'll just jam all day and then grab ideas that way. So we do write as a group. But so that's the basic group. But the record that those two songs are from is called Moof. And the first song, Tale of the Comet, is with Nels Klein as a guest. And Nels didn't come to the studio because he lives in New York, so he flew in his tracks. We sent him our track, and he sent back guitars, great guitar stuff. And then the last song, Criminal Luminosity, is with Elvis Keane. He's I don't know if you know him, but he's in this really cool band called Fiedlar. Do you know them?
But they were the young guys, right? Well, they're probably
older now. They are young. Well, they're in their 20s, you know, maybe mid-20s now. They started out as
teenagers. Yeah, I remember hearing
about them. Their dad is Greg Keane from TSOL. And so...
The keyboard man.
Yeah, exactly.
Great guy.
Greg's an old friend of mine. And I knew those guys, the kids, when they really were kids. They were like 8 years old, and they used to come to some gigs that Greg and I were doing together and stuff. And they always had an interest in music, and they're just really knowledgeable about the past. You know, they love the sort of first wave of LA punk scene, you know, like you guys and all the bands, Black Flag, all the bands from the early punk days. So, they grew up with that stuff, so they...
Yeah, but I tell you, I meet a lot of dudes, their kids don't like music guys. Sometimes
really?
That happens, too, yeah. You know, here's another collab you did with Stu.
Marcy Buku. Man on the left bank. She was sad, she'd been born a Yank. Asked me, could she read some Rambo? I said, not. Nature's insistence. I'm trying to break through this funky bridge resistance. And vibing in the metro, dancing to that retro. And vibing in the metro, I'm dancing to that retro. Marcy Buku. I know who you really are, but who really are you? Marcy Buku. I know who you really are, but who really are you? She wanted to retrace Hemingway's steps. I just wanted to eat some crepes. She said, your French is embarrassing me, as she adjusted her frock. I said, I'm just doing to their language what they did to rock. You know, I need action. At
Yeah.
Walk for Pedro show, last music for this edition. We had a Double Knot Spy Car again, and this time with Stu from, what was his band called?
The Negro Problem.
Negro Problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember those cats. And then he got into, we were talking off air, people, he got into theater writing plays and stuff. And he's a really talented cat, man. He can sing, he can write, and play. We had Stony Spring after that with Seed Passer. Atsuko Chiba with I Just. Mike Cooper with Bankalypse. Paul Motion, there's a drummer, man.
Yeah.
We lost a couple of years ago. And he made some record. I think his last record was with Petra. Easy Living. And finally, you had to send me a correction here. Hi, Rai Rai from Cheka Remedy?
Yeah, I don't know how to say the first name, but
Algerian, right?
Remedy. She's an Algerian singer. Yeah, that was an interesting project.
It's beautiful. I love it, man.
It's really cool. It's funny, on that song, Flea plays bass, and I think East Bay Ray is on that. So the story on that is this: there's this French guy whose name escapes me that I had met. He came over and he produced that record with this woman, Remedy, she was a really famous Rye singer. This is in the 90s, so she was in her 70s then. She's no longer with us, but so she was in her 70s back then, so she had a long history in Rye music, and he produced this thing of mixing Algerian musicians with European musicians with American musicians. So he was flying all over the place with these tapes, so he got hooked up with Geza, and that's who I recorded that with. So we did it in pieces.
I know the connect, Joe. East Bay Ray, Geza did the first Dead Kennedy album.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's a small world.
It really is. Yeah.
Ain't that a trip? But I'm glad you got involved with that. It's really happening. I mean, music is a universal connect. It's just a great thing. You're working on, well, before I get on this record that you're working on, you make your own fuzz boxes?
I do. I make, make effects pedals in general, mostly fuzz, because I like fuzz, but all kinds of stuff. It's funny, I haven't been doing anything immediately in the immediate past, but it's still something I do. I have a little, sort of business, if you want to call it that, but it's called F-Hole, and it's it's where I sell effects pedals and also circuit bent stuff, which is, taking existing sound-making, maybe toys or devices, and sort of altering the electronics so that they do something different. It's really fun for me. That's how I got started, and then I graduated to effects pedals. But, yeah, I really enjoy it, and I really have no real knowledge. I didn't go to school to study electronics. It's strictly the university of the internet,
Yeah, and learning by doing. And there's a website, right? What's the
URL? Yeah, it's fholefx.com. So it's fx.com. So fholefx.com. And it's not real up to date, but it's got a bunch of stuff you can hear. Some, demos of some of the pedals and poke around. So it's
sure, man. So I do you make any shit for bass?
I haven't really, but
one day, right?
People have asked me that, and it's definitely.
Well, I just asked you that because I'd like to use it.
Well,
and play with you with it. What about really. This record that you're doing right now? The Joe Berardi record.
Well, yeah, that's. It's a solo record in the true sense of it. I'm just doing it all by myself. It was kind of the plan all along, but the last year definitely sort of, well, it's funny because I've been sort of gathering material for it over the years, and it just, how it is. It's like you do stuff that you sort of always put your own thing on the back burner. Well, I shouldn't say you. I always put my own thing on the back burner. And so finally, with the pandemic and the shutdown, starting in last May, it's like okay, I have the time now because I'm just sitting at home, not working. I really, really, if I don't do this record in a really sort of concerted way, I'm never going to do it. So that's what I've been doing. So sort of piecing it together. It's mostly, you know, it's mostly keyboard based. And it's mostly composed, you know. I mean, there's some improv in there, but it's mostly just composed pieces, instrumental. You know, I mean, I told a few people that I'm doing it. I've been working on my own record, solo record, and they go, so it's going to just be you playing drums, you know. Like, no, it's not. I'm really not playing drums on it much at all. So it's, you know, people have a sort of preconceived notion of what it would be based on what they know of what I do, which makes sense, you know. But and other people say, oh, so you're going to sing on it? And it's like, no, I'm definitely not going to sing on it. So it's instrumental, and it's kind of all over the place, but that's, you know, for me, that's a good thing. But yeah, I think you played a track early on that's sort of a sort of give a little preview of what I've been doing, and it's hard to describe it, and also it's not finished, so I sort of haven't formulated what it is. But
are you talking about the Big Italian Style Mix Fry?
Yeah, that song is one of the oldest. I've had that recording kicking around, sort of two-thirds finished for years, and then I finally finished it off. And it's one of the only ones that I tried to take a stab at a full mix on, so I thought I'd throw that out there. But
it's really interesting. I can't wait. And when that record gets done, and it will, because we know
it will.
We know what Orson Welles learned us.
That's right. You go want it before it's time.
Right, but when it does get done, Joe, please come back on the show and let's talk about every fucking tune on it.
I would love to. I would really love that. Really appreciate it, Mike. Yeah,
big honor to have you aboard, truly. And people, me and Joe are working Motoko Hanna on a new record. And plus, we're on the just recently released Emma Goldman Bust Out Brigade with Devin Hoff. Joe, big honor. Can't wait to talk to you again. Can't wait to play with you again. Can't wait to hear your edits.
Yes,
loving
all
it. And your mixes, all that shit.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Right back. You deserve, Joe. People, it's been a Watt Pedro Show, April 3, 2021 edition. Keep your powder dry.